Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, welcome back to the Loot Podcast here on Posho Recaps. My name is Ariel, and I am joined by my co-host who would never steal my wristwatch and sell it for ketamine, is Dr. Amanda.
Hello, Ariel. It's good to see you. I was hoping that maybe I could be the baby Yoda and you could be my Mungalorian.
I'm nothing if not a good Mungalorian. That is not the first time I have been accused of that. Yeah, we're here to discuss episode 8 of season 1, Spades Night. Are you a spades person, Dr. Amanda? I know that's a real game, right?
It spades. Is a real game. I don't think I've ever played spades. I know that there's like there. So my dad tried to teach us hearts when we were kids. Like he had this like fantasy that like our 4-person family would play hearts together.
Stop, I'm gonna
and
cry.
It was really, really sweet. But my mom hates games, and like my sister and I just like didn't like it. Just never took off. Like it's really sad. Really sad.
It for was him. His dream.
But I don't. Is spades like hearts or like? I think it's one of those partners card games where you have to like send secret signals to your partner and try to like work on getting suits or matching them or something like that.
From what I remember, yeah, there is an objective. Like you need to like trick people into getting what you want. Like it's kind of like a more gaslighty version of Go Fish.
I love that. The biggest problem with Go Fish is that it's not gaslighty enough. Is there a gatekeeping version of Go Fish and like a girl boss version of Go
Fish?
Well,
perhaps the other suits, right? Because there's spades and there's hearts. Perhaps there's like a diamonds and
that would be the girl boss version.
That'd be the girl boss one. And then what's the other one? Spades, hearts,
clubs?
Clubs?
Is clubs?
Yeah, clubs sounds violent. I don't want to play that one.
We're going to go to a spades night in this episode, which is really fun. Like I was excited to see that we're going to learn a little bit more about Molly and Howard's family because we like start off knowing that they're cousins, so it's cool that this gets to explore that more. I don't know any other big like topics that we want to get into before jumping into the episode, Ariel?
Yeah, I mean, this is final three. This is a final three episode.
This is the anti-penultimate episode.
Yes, this is the anti-penultimate, a word that we love around here. And I really, really liked this episode. I was kind of nervous going in. I'm like, okay, we're coming to an end. Like, I have cared, but I really need you to draw me in more like emotionally. And I think this episode absolutely did that in ways that were some expected, some unexpected. And I think that's where the show is at its best, when both the comedy and the heart come from unexpected pairs, unexpected places, unexpected moments. And I think this episode definitely had that. So I was really happy.
Yeah, I agree. To your point about like unexpected pairs, like one of the things that we sort of marked up front is, one of the great things about having a talented ensemble cast is that you can break off these characters in different clusters and play with different pairings and see what different things that brings from the character and the actor's performances. And here we do see for the first time, I think, we get Molly and Howard, which we've seen before, but we get to spend much more time with that. We see
in a new context.
In a new context, we get to see Arthur and Nicholas together, which is new. Like that's a new pairing, and we get to see them with Sophia. So I really felt like this was fun in terms of taking the characters that we've gotten to know a little bit and putting them in these different sort of unexpected situations.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. Like it has me excited for season two, because regardless of where season one ends up, or if there's some kind of cliffhanger, if not, whatever. We have such a great foundation here with season one of like these characters and what they've been through and their history now. So it makes me really hopeful for the future.
Yes, hopeful for the future. That's a great place to get started because we have a couple that is looking towards their future together. We open the episode with Molly and Jean-Pierre on a date, and they're it's like this is very like early honeymoon period date behavior. Like they're
Yeah,
holding
absolutely.
hands, looking lovingly into each other's eyes while they're eating their crepes to the detriment of their crepe cutting, prowess here.
I have never tried to eat a crepe with one hand, but I imagine that it would be more difficult than eating it with two hands. I think I can say that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. When you have two hands, like, you might put them both to good use. Yeah, because crepes don't really like cut well with a fork. Like a pancake or a waffle, you can kind of get enough leverage to get through it with the fork, but the crepe is so thin. I think you
Yeah.
really need that serration to
It
cut through.
probably absolutely certainly to like get the crepe separated, but like I guess it would depend on the we're gonna get really technical here. It would depend probably on the filling.
Oh, yeah.
Like if there's enough space, if there's like a couple of banana layers in there, make it easier to cut, or if it's just like straight Nutella, good luck.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, and then you're dealing with like, you're actually probably just smushing the filling everywhere. Like, you're with all of that pressure from the side of the fork, the filling is like splurting out. It's just
It's
not
like
the
when you
ideal.
bite into a sandwich and then you don't have like the outsides like covered with like a plastic wrap or a napkin or
Yes.
something, and then everything just like smushes out. It's
I
awful.
know. That's the worst. That's the worst. So, Ariel, I think you've already revealed yourself. Are you more of a sweet crepe person or a savory crepe person?
I am so sweet. My I have the biggest I have the
You're
biggest
giving
sweet
me a
tooth.
toothache.
I have the biggest sweet tooth. Known to man. I think it is a genetics thing. It was handed
Wow.
down by my father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, these days I have to be careful about that kind of stuff for health reasons. But yeah, it definitely, and not to say that I've had some very, very delicious savory crepes, but they're just, I've had so few of them because I never really crave them. I'm not really craving the crepe,
Yeah. So do
the
you do
savory.
like a Nutella banana slices? Would that be a go-to for you, or what would be your crepe
Okay.
filling?
There used to be a place near my old apartment that had, it was called a black and white crepe. And it was, oh God, I have to remember. It had Oreos, Nutella, and some kind of like white chocolate
Oh,
something.
gosh.
There was like another thing.
That's
And it
too
was just
much,
like,
Ariel. That's
it was
way too
disgusting.
much.
Like, no matter, to say it out loud, it is so embarrassing. And like, so, like, I can't believe I'm admitting this,
I'm
but.
appalled.
But I would, on a good day, I would eat it in two sittings because that puppy was like, you know how like usually they fold it over and it's like a triangle? This was
Yes.
like two triangles then folded in half two together. So it was actually like two in one.
Oh,
It was,
wow.
I felt like a monster every time I finished one.
I feel like a monster just having heard about it. That is, wow. That's amazing. I think I'm going savory over sweet in almost every context. That's just how I
You
roll.
inspire me. That's
I
what I will
know.
say.
I'm an American hero. So, Speaking of sweet confections, Jean-Pierre has gotten Molly a gift. It's a strawberry Kit Kat made in Japan. And I guess he went to Japan to get it. Like, and you can't, I know that they have different candies. Like, you know, they have our brands, but different candies mm-hmm. in different places. So I guess this is something you can only get in Japan. He tells her to look at the Kit Kat over the weekend while he's gone and think of him. And she says, well, that's very sweet, but I'm going to eat this the second that you're gone.
Yeah, I saw that coming from a mile away. I was like, oh, he's so stupid. If he thinks that Kit Kat is going to make it, that is dumb.
And we find out that Jean-Pierre is going to Paris for the weekend to celebrate his mother's birthday, which gets them talking about family. And Jean-Pierre thinks that family is very important. And we learn that Molly actually doesn't see her own family very much, even though they live nearby. And she says, well, you know how it is, traffic, schedules, daylight savings time.
Mind you, they're in the same time zone. So it's not like, and even if they weren't, it doesn't make any sense. So it is very funny.
I love the idea of using the excuse of daylight savings time for probably multiple missed engagements.
I petitioned the government to get rid of it. I don't know what to tell you, Mom. I can't call you.
Didn't they actually get rid of it, though, Ariel?
They're trying. Like, I don't. Oh, okay. Like, as far as I heard, unless I missed like the official thing, I know there was like a bill, you know, like floating around that they were trying to get rid of it once and for all.
Yeah, I read that something passed. So I guess, I don't know. There's no way of knowing until
my question was like,
until my iPhone either updates or doesn't update.
Until I get that Apple News notification about a horrific event on like a Sunday morning, I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
But I will say it was confusing because I was like, well, one, how would they even decide which one to keep? And two, would it be DST or ET? You know, there's like standard time and then I guess the daylight savings version. I don't know.
I'm perpetually confused by it, and like I definitely have Eastern Standard Time supremacy. Like when I send people it's like I'm very problematic. Like when I send people my availability across time zones, I was like, I will not figure out what time this is.
You can convert it for yourself.
I definitely do that. I can tell that it's toxic. That's my toxic trait.
At least you're aware.
Eastern time supremacy. But speaking of toxic traits, you know, Jean-Pierre's going to thank Molly for meeting him halfway. We find out that they're in Montreal just for like a quick date. They just met halfway in Montreal for 80 minutes. But you know, Molly says, well, I haven't spent much time here, but it seems beautiful. And then when they walk out of this restaurant, it reveals that they're actually in like a little tent on a jetway, and they're both going to retreat to their respective private jets, Ariel. They both took private jets to a date.
First of all, it's the weirdest private hangar I have ever seen. Like, it's CGI City, but that's fine. But to your point, this episode couldn't have been any more timely. Like, is like more proof that Apple comes from the future. This like private jet, right? Like days after, I think it was just last week, right? That the Taylor Swift. Well, there was this list revealed of like celebrities and all these
private jet trip. Yes.
And Taylor Swift, our girl, who also gets mentioned in this episode, is at the top of the list. Very girl boss of her.
Very girl boss of her. That's the diamonds suit. So climate criminal Molly Wells is going to take off in her private jet. It's a coincidence that this is hitting at the time that we are like sort of still in this news cycle where people are chiding celebrities for their wasteful use of private jets. And there's like a whole discussion about, you know, how much of our climate discussion should be about personal responsibility versus, you know, larger public and, you know, private company action, corporate action. Like, of course, that's a much more relevant part of the discussion. But then when you talk about the celebrities who actually do have the personal power to make an impact, I do think that that's a different level of accountability. And this show, Loot, is about Molly Wells, a multi-billionaire who is, you know, trying to turn over a new leaf after her divorce and put her time mm-hmm. and effort into this charitable foundation, which exists to make a positive impact. And you wonder, Ariel and dear listeners, you might wonder, would it make an even more positive impact if she stopped taking private jets everywhere?
To Montreal. Thanks for meeting me halfway.
She goes to Miami for a party in a private jet.
She brought a helicopter to a girls' soccer game.
She does drop off and pick up at a high schooler's soccer game. And now she spends a total of 80 minutes in Montreal to go on a date with her boyfriend. Like, so what is the carbon footprint of Molly Wells' social calendar at this point?
It's huge. It's like T-Rex sized. And if she's not careful, other things will also go extinct the same way that the T-Rex went. Yeah. No, it's crazy. And I think it's good of the show to draw attention to that. You know, we've had the discussion of like, where does the show's responsibility specifically end and reside? You know, it is entertainment and it is run by a big company, but like clearly the writers have the will, the power somewhat to kind of like shed a light on these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And it's not falling on deaf ears. I mean, and it is interesting that like we have seen her in some ways make progress, and then here, like even just going to work, right? Like showing up at the office, and here she, because it's easier, just, and we know this as poor people compared to Molly, mm-hmm. It's easier to fall back on your habits when you can forget about them, when you have that privilege. And like, she hasn't shown up to work in 4 days because she's been like in dating La La Land. And she also has been probably taking other trips, not just to Montreal, that we didn't even hear about. Mm-hmm. So all to say that she's going to have to do a lot of carbon emission. what's that thing when they're like, they offsetting.
Oh,
she owes a lot of offsetting for Mother Earth. I'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the show is as self-conscious of this as I would like it to be. Like mm-hmm. earlier in the season, we do have Sophia say like, no, I do not want your fleet of SUVs to roll into our, our charitable function. But like, I don't know. Like, I think we're supposed to see this scene and be like, oh my gosh, like these people are so rich. It's so ridiculous. They like, you know, took private jets to a date the way that somebody else would take an Uber. But like, mm-hmm. I mean, the irony that if she just stopped taking these jets, she would do more good than anything that her foundation is ever going to do. Like that, like, I don't think that the show is underlining that, which is indisputably a fact. Like if somebody of Molly's mm-hmm. status, like, could reduce their own carbon footprint in a meaningful way, that mm-hmm. is doing much more good than whatever these, like, you know, giving this like relatively chump change to all of these local organizations is doing. So anyway, it was really ironic that this episode hit like at the same time that we're in this news cycle having this discussion in real time. And you know, and like you said, Ariel, later in this episode, there's going to be a Taylor Swift reference, there's going to be a Greta Thunberg reference. So I think that this is something like it's worth talking about.
It is. Yeah. And the not to get too far ahead of it, but I think it's really funny that when they do mention Greta Thunberg, Nicholas's response is, I don't give a shit about her.
Exactly.
It kind of speaks to like our overall cultural, like, how are they going to fix this? We know what the problems are, mm-hmm. but then now what can we and what do we actually do? I think is fascinating.
Yes. After the credits, we're going to be in the office in the conference room where we see Howard on FaceTime with Tanya, which is sort of where we left at the end of the last episode. And
is it the same FaceTime call?
Oh, have they, they just stay on a face? Like, do they do like a by the pillow? Like just uh-huh. put a FaceTime on? Oh, maybe it's possible.
Probably not.
But Howard's showing Tanya zit, which she says looks like a dairy zit, and asks him to see if he's been using ice cream in his cereal again. Ariel, do you put ice cream in your cereal?
I have some shame. when it comes to sugar, I have never done this. I don't think that I could do this. As much as I love like mixing ice cream in a mug or in a bowl to make it more liquidy and then
You like making ice cream soup?
Yeah, I like making like a soft serve type, my own ghetto version of soft serve. I would never do this. I would never do this to the cereal. I would never do this to the ice cream. I think they both have their place, and this is kind of a crime.
Howard says it's the same thing as milk.
when the ice cream melts,
it's just the same thing as milk. What, like, I haven't done this in many, many years, but I used to like sometimes, like if I was having like coffee, like a after dinner coffee, like maybe put a scoop of ice cream in the coffee, like, and it becomes like the milk and the sugar.
Yes, that's a little different. That I can abide. A little bit of like a frappe, a little bit of like a what's the soda one called? The like a
root beer float. Yeah,
that makes a little more sense to me.
Oh, Ariel, this place near me does like these really good cold brew ice cream floats.
Ooh.
And you don't, I know you don't drink coffee, but you do drink espresso martinis. So maybe you would like it.
Maybe the ice cream in the espresso martini.
Not a bad idea.
This is where my brain goes.
When Nicholas comes in, he sits next to Howard, but Howard is going to move because he can't be caught sitting next to a snake. And Nicholas is going to say, whatever, they call Taylor Swift a snake too. And that only made her stronger.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what she's going to do now. Mm-hmm. I will say I'm very fascinated to see what she, I think she's been very clever and intelligent about her PR. And she's very, she has this way of like looking effortless as far as like how she presents herself to the world in a way, but clearly, obviously it's very
calculated
and very concise and just precise. And like she has a whole team of people obviously around her. And all my point is only to say, I'm so selfishly fascinated to see how she's going to pivot because this is a really bad look for her. Like this
is not good. It's not good. Top of the list.
And like, what are you going to do? Get on regular planes? That's not an option. Is she gonna like travel by cruise ship? Is that any better? Like cars only? Yeah. It's just I wonder where this is gonna go.
Yeah. I think I saw a tweet that was like this, something like, I just saw Taylor Swift on a Greyhound bus eating an egg salad sandwich. So I think you guys won.
Taylor, not egg salad from the bus stop.
Are you a Swiftie, Ariel?
I support Taylor's version of things. I'll say that. And you know, I've belted out my karaoke or three to some Taylor songs. I think it's she has some great anthems. I'll say that.
When Sophia starts the meeting, Molly's going to sort of waltz in late and apologize. And she's brought some snacks to make up for it. Sophia's like, late? You've been gone for 4 days.
That's the best. I love Sophia coming in with the hard facts.
Molly lost track of time, and Nicholas says you'd lose track of time too if you had a hot French guy. Ainsley is going to reply that there's lots of love going around, so Arthur has a romantic getaway planned with Chelsea. And then Ainsley like gets all choked up and say, I wanted to tell you guys before I tell my parents I'm engaged. And she shows the ring. Howard leans right over her and says, "Oh, Arthur, tell us about this trip."
This was incredible. The execution of this is flawless. As far as I'm concerned, every single episode that came before this where we didn't get any information about her made this moment like it was worth it. Like everything that we didn't see, and you and I were like, we'd rather, you know, we want more story for her, more story for her, not at the expense of moments like this. This is so good. I feel so bad for her, but this is incredible stuff.
It's really funny. It seems like the other employees in the office care as much about Ainsley as the writers of the show do.
So good.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So Arthur and Chelsea are going to a wine tasting in Temecula, and Arthur sort of downplays it. He says, no big deal. We're staying at a La Quinta Inn. Our room overlooks the parking lot. Rhonda's going
to... depressing.
It does sound really depressing. It does sound really depressing. A wine tasting sounds nice. I don't know. I feel like poor Chelsea, like Arthur's not, doesn't seem that excited about her. Like, I feel like we're going to very be like by the end of this episode, Sophia's going to give him some advice that's clearly about Molly. And it feels like we're really like saying like, guys, this Chelsea thing, like we're just, it's don't get too invested in Arthur. And Chelsea.
Yeah. We haven't even shown her. Is this the same?
This is the woman he met at the bar.
Okay. Yeah. I honestly was too lazy to look up her name. And I was like, I think it's her. Yeah.
I thought she seemed lovely.
She seems very lovely. And she seemed like there was like a genuine connection there. He certainly believed, she certainly believed that he could speak Spanish more than I did. So that's something.
She believed in him. Rhonda's going to chime in that it's wonderful that they all have such vibrant personal lives. For example, last night, Rhonda's going to say, I completed my menopause. And everyone clapped for her. And here's Sophia saying, congratulations, Rhonda.
It's so stupid. And I love the way that like Rhonda is kind of articulating how we feel in a sense, where it's like the writers are getting such a kick out of keeping these two characters so on the periphery. It's like,
yeah,
I love that we all have such vibrant private lives, but they're the only two that we don't ever
see. We don't know anything about them.
It's so good.
At the risk of sounding completely ignorant, like when she says, I completed my menopause, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means.
And I'm
terrified by the very idea of it. Like, I just was like, should I Google this? And I was like, no, I can't. I don't know.
I think we can all agree that until it's your time to find out, and you know, I think apparently men go through something similar. I don't really want to know, you know, we're all going to find out in our own time.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a problematic way to view it, but that's just my very genuine reaction to this line in that moment.
I'm glad you felt that. I'm glad you said that though, because I was feeling like, see, I'm just, my male privilege is showing because I don't know anything, but yeah, there you go. It's our youth. It's really our youth.
That's our youth. Yeah. Oh, my youth. Oh, stop. No, I think it just really goes to show that like there's no reason, like in our society, we just want to keep everything that like at once you turn 40, you're just supposed to go in a dark closet and see you.
Go away and die.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm over 40, by the way. So in Molly's office, Howard's going to come in, and Molly's called him to talk. And he says, if this is about the fridge space, I keep my bike helmet in there so it's cold when I put it on, which is such a good idea.
It's so selfish to talk again about, like, you know, the... I'll just say U.S. like the way we like misuse like technology, things that are or like things that are, you know, in this case the fridge space, like he's using fridge power to cool his helmet. It's
cool,
just like,
his helmet.
This is so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I'm very glad that Howard wears a bike helmet, though, as a brain injury researcher. I'm definitely a strong proponent of always wear a helmet anytime you ride a bicycle, anytime you ride a scooter or a motorcycle, God forbid, which you shouldn't be riding at all, but always wear a helmet. So I'm very happy for Howard with that. And but the real reason that Molly called him in is not about this helmet. It's because she's been thinking about the family. She misses everyone, and she knows that she lost touch. And Howard's going to say everybody still asks about you. And we learn about this cousin, Renee, who Molly is particularly concerned about. And Howard's going to say she's a tough cookie, but inside that cookie is an even tougher cookie that's impossible to bite into.
I love when like the setup of the joke kind of goes against the punchline, but it's so good because like you think it's going one way and then it zags in a way that like the setup no longer makes all that much sense, but it's Howard, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, and that's definitely like, I think that they're using that structure with a lot of Howard's jokes, and like Ron Funkus like really like nails it every time. So I've been really enjoying that.
I agree.
We're going to learn that Renee and Molly used to be close, but they haven't spoken since Molly missed her wedding. But there's going to be an opportunity for her to reconnect because Howard tells her that she still hosts Spades Night every week at her house. And there's one tonight. Howard's going and Molly should come too. And he offers to protect her from any shade and says, you'll be my baby Yoda and I'll be your Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, thank you. I have no idea what those words mean.
But that's okay because Howard can drive her over and they'll get up to date on the family and they'll watch both seasons of The Mandalorian on 8x speed.
8x. I have to say that the Chrome extension with the Xing has changed my life for things that like I'm not quite sure I want to watch. Mm-hmm. I can just like... start to like if I want to slow down, then that's what's telling me like my interest in the show is growing.
Oh, and
if
not, okay.
Like, I'm not proud of it, and I'm like, even like months ago I would be on paper I'm so against this, but in this age of like we can't watch everything we want to watch, there's times where I'm like, okay, I'm not sure if I want to watch this, so let me try to like get through some of it in a more condensed time frame and then kind of make a decision from there. So
the only time I've ever like, so I've sped up podcasts, of course.
That's where it all started for us.
But the only time I've ever sped up viewing like something is, I think if I was like rewatching a Survivor season for a purpose, I've sped it up because I've already seen it and I, you know, wanted to get through it like for a particular. Mm-hmm. Like podcast related homework assignment or other reason like that. It really does feel, and I remember I used to feel this way about podcasts, and maybe it's just like once you cross over into that realm, it's just you're done. But like it does feel like a crime that somebody like made this beautiful. I mean, like podcasts, like, okay, we're making a podcast right now. It's like you just hop on, like blab into a microphone and shut it off. Idea that like somebody created like this work of art. Actors like worked on the timing of their line delivery, that a cinematographer like framed a shot. Like the idea that you're manipulating that to like cram the entertainment into your brain. Like there's something to me that feels almost like dystopian about that.
I know, it's awful. I hate myself. And like to your point, it just that's kind of what it started out like.
The Oreo crap, and you should
I'm a monster. No, they to your point though, exactly. That's kind of where it started for me, where it was like, oh, I need to rewatch this. Oh, but I've already seen this. It's gonna take so long. Oh, I'll just make a little faster. And now it's like, there was just that day that I had that realization, oh my God, this problem that you have of like these shows that you're on the fence about, again, not a show I'm like really looking forward to, or a show that like I'm in on or hyped up, whatever stipulation you want to put on it. It's like, ooh, this could help me like make some decisions. So, you know, as a Pisces, I have a lot of decision paralysis. So this is all, you know, this is all healthy as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's a necessary evil at this point, especially if you're somebody who consumes content in a specific way. It becomes like part of what that is, but there is just something like, I think it's interesting to reflect on that. But 8X, I think, Ariel, we can say
that's I've never watched anything on 8X unless I was like looking for a moment, you know, like, oh, I'm trying to find that moment. I don't know where it is. Yeah. Other than that, like, it's incomprehensible, basically.
I love this detail that Howard tells Molly that his car won't make it up to the hill to her house. So she'll need to walk down to the El Pollo Loco and he'll meet her there. And then as soon as he leaves, she's like, oh, yeah, OK, sounds good. And as soon as he leaves, she's like, El Pollo Loco, and like starts to Google it.
I don't know what that is. Yeah, it's that rich privilege showing.
Mm-hmm. But like, I think that this is what they're trying to do to make Molly relatable and a likable character, is while like she's a multi-billionaire and could obviously take a private jet to Renee's spades night if she wanted to, she's gonna like, you know, walk a quarter mile or whatever it is to a fast food place and pick up food for her cousin and ride over in his car with his lizards, crickets hopping around everywhere. Like, she's not too good for this, and she's not going to like shame Howard for suggesting it.
No, and clearly it's part of where she came from. And even though she doesn't know what Pollo Loco is, as you have already said, she's going full analog here. She's like, okay, fine, I'm going to do this. You know, fine. This is my history. You know, I think there's an element of like her quote unquote trying to get back to her roots. Right. You know, like, seems like she, and we'll find out later, it seems like she does very much feel like an outsider, or like people are judging her a little bit for her money and her success. And she's like, yeah, I could do this. I used to be a normal person in the world. Like, I can do this again.
And then we're going to see Molly and Howard riding over to Spades Night together. Molly sitting in the passenger seat with the El Pollo Loco takeout bag in her lap. You know, Howard just tells her to put it in the back seat, where we see that he has a lizard back there. And Howard says, you know, that's Jessica. I told you about her before. And Molly's like, oh, that story was about a lizard? That makes a lot more sense now.
Uh-huh. I can only imagine. She ate my crickets.
We get, like, I love the idea, though, of Howard just, like, prattling on to Molly about some story and her, like, nodding and smiling and being like, this does not make a lot of sense.
This does not make sense. Yeah. Isn't your girlfriend's name, like, Hazel or whatever? But anyway.
We're getting the family update. Cousin Kelly is gay, but not out yet. She goes to Yosemite a lot with her roommate, Courtney. We're very happy for them.
It's sweet. Yeah, she's not out yet. It's like, okay, we're not saying anything. She's just, it seems like this is what it is. We're supportive. It's sweet.
It is very sweet. It is very sweet. We find out that Uncle James finally got the internet, so he thinks that seltzer causes cancer.
Damn seltzer. Big seltzer is out to get us.
Yeah, big seltzer is definitely out to get me. Like, if seltzer causes if seltzer causes cancer, then I am in trouble. Like, I basically exist on coffee and seltzer. That's like 90% of my intake in a given day. So
they'll get you with those quote unquote natural flavors that they add.
Oh, I bet that's how they get you. Yeah, so they're moving on to talk about Renee, and Molly's obviously nervous about rekindling that relationship, because it sounds like they used to be close and they've had a falling out. But Howard found a picture of them as kids, and he thinks this will melt Renee's cold heart. And that's sort of the plan going in.
So it seems like Renee also has a cold heart inside of the cookie that was like inside the double cookie that
a
was
tough
inside
cookie cookie an even tougher cookie, and then an ice cold heart inside.
Yes. Inside,
so it's like the Oreo is the tough cookie inside the crepe, which is like a tougher cookie, and then you've got your white
and
chocolate.
Then the white chocolate. This is, I'm getting a stomach ache.
White chocolate is just bad.
It's not chocolate. I understand that. And
do you like it? You enjoy it?
Yes. I had like a really... I didn't know this was going to be a therapy session about my sugar intake. I had like... When I was a kid, white chocolate was like this special treat that we would get every once in a while. And it was just like... I think that's the thing that stayed with me. It was like the white chocolate was special. And like it doesn't matter that it's more artificial, obviously. And it's, again, it's not real chocolate. I understand that. But God, it's so good. Like it's just, I hate that I feel that way, but I've always felt that way.
Well, I'm like literally yucking your yum, which I don't want to do. I feel like that's really rude. I don't get the appeal of white chocolate. I don't get it.
It has
it's like cocoa
butter. As I eat less and less things, like I think the overstimulation is less. So like when you eat something that's like super, super artificial after a long time after you haven't, like the appeal is lessened.
Okay, it is less. Yeah.
And on the same, like I guess the other side of that coin is I used to hate dark chocolate and now I really appreciate it and I actually like it a lot. So I think it's, you know, I'm kind of an adult in some ways.
You're very much an adult, and all of your food preferences are valid, Ariel. I just want to make that clear.
Everything I needed to hear.
Okay. We're going to go back to the office, and it's like after the close of business, like it's a little bit emptied out. We only have Nicholas and Arthur there when a flower delivery person comes, and they're very curious about it, and they look at the card. You know, Nicholas and Arthur are like, should we, shouldn't we? Arthur's like, I don't know, Sophia's a really private person. But then Nicholas is gonna go for it anyway, and the card says, "To my dearest Fifi, I crave your touch."
The way that Nicholas like leans over and like looks at the thing, I loved it. And Fifi, they're both were looking like I was looking like, Fifi.
This is such a fun little B plot here in this episode. Sophia's going to come in and like hastily just grab the flowers. And as she's like retreating to her office, she makes a call on the cell phone and you hear her say like, "Flowers, Jalen, seriously, you're going to have to do a whole lot better than that."
And I was just as riveted as they were, like, oh, better than that. What happened? Like, it's just like immediately because Sophia, you know, we've seen Sophia be such a composed person. Mm-hmm. She's so on top of things, certainly on top of herself and very responsible. So probably the most responsible adult person in that entire conference room from earlier in the episode. So to see here like some drama for her side is like so exciting.
Yeah. And Nicholas and Arthur are so engrossed. They just sort of like lock in, completely fixated, watching Sophia have this conversation behind her glass office wall. And like they're clearly looking, like Arthur at least is looking for an excuse like for why he should stay in the office. And he's like, I just lost something in my desk. And Nicholas is just like, I'll help you look. But they're just both like completely stay staring, gawking at Sophia with these like great reaction faces. It's like all the popcorn gifts, like the human monster. Yes. It's really good.
Yeah, they're both great here, especially our boy Nicholas.
Mm-hmm. Back at Spades night, Howard and Molly are going to come to the door, and like Howard's really giving Molly like this pep talk about how it's going to be great and everybody's going to like be happy to see her. It's fine. And then right as Renee is opening the door to greet them, he looks at Molly. He's like, "Is that what you're going to wear?"
It is so good and so unhelpful. Like, he was doing great. He's like, he's saying all the right things. He's being supportive. It's really sweet. Clearly he's trying to help, like, nothing but the best intentions of like trying to reunite these members of his family. And then like, wait, is that what you're wearing? Like, did he not see her wear it the entire time in the effing car? I don't understand.
She was behind the Polo Loco bag, the Polo Loco bag. We couldn't see.
That's true. Poor Molly, right as the door opens, she's like, "What?"
So we start to see like Molly with her family. Like, we get a feeling, you know, for all of these different characters, like, you know, Uncle James is gonna call her Hollywood. You know,
hey Hollywood.
And you know, it's just like really sweet to kind of see Molly in this like very comfortable, kind of homey family setting. I think that my favorite part here is when we meet Cousin Kelly and she introduces Molly to her roommate, Courtney. And Molly's just like, yes. Hi, Courtney. Kelly. Yay. With like two like really awkward, like enthusiastic thumbs up. And Howard is just going to lean in and say, wonderful allyship.
Wonderful allyship. I love that they never cut back to either Courtney or Kelly. Kelly, her partner, because or rather the other way around, it's Kelly is her relative and Courtney is her quote unquote roommate, because it's just so funny to put the camera to sit on the thumbs up for like the 17 seconds that it lasts.
Yeah. It's like, it's more of that like kind of like cool aunt energy that we got from like the kids dance troupe scene in the last episode. I feel like Molly's very much giving that. And, you know, Molly's going to try to break the ice with Renee. She shows her that childhood picture. And, you know, Renee is, like, not receiving it well. Like, Molly's like, weren't we so cute? And Renee's like, so you're saying I'm not cute anymore? And Molly's like, well, I just wanted to show you how close we were when we were kids. And she's like, so now you're also saying I'm old? And Molly's just like,
This will end badly, no matter where, no matter what direction you go.
She's going to try to throw Howard out under the bus. She's like, the picture was Howard's idea. And Howard's like, I've never seen that picture before in my life.
This is hilarious. The way they like, it's very realistic, like family dynamics of like, they immediately out each other. Then Howard is like, no, I've never seen that before. And it's, I can kind of see, like, there's a little bit of a, I don't know that this will make any sense, but there's, it almost like, he's willing to believe that his girlfriend, when she's like, oh, I've never done what Nicholas is accusing me of. And Howard is just like immediately willing to accept that. Mm-hmm. And then for him here to lie so concretely and so emphatically about something, like, I think normally people, when they're being honest, they don't have to speak that emphatically.
Right.
So I just think there's like an interesting like Howardish way of looking at the world there.
When Howard pulls Molly into the kitchen, you know, so they're going to go into the kitchen to sort of debrief on like how badly this has gone. And Howard says, I can't have Renee mad at me. She's my lizard sitter when I'm out of town.
See, everyone's got an angle.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good. Molly, who would sit that lizard? He can't just leave it in the car.
I know. I don't think Tanya is going to watch the lizard.
No.
I don't think Tanya would. Tanya feed crickets to a lizard? I really don't think so.
No, she doesn't. She's going to feed him brown bread, if anything.
Molly's disappointed because Howard was supposed to protect her. You were going to be my Mungalorian. This was very much Ariel, me trying to remember, what is it? Goku and
Goku and Vegeta. Goku and tofu and
fajita.
And fajita. Yes, those are their names. Oh, God.
Howard says, I thought this was really funny, that he doesn't know why he ever thought the photo would work. Renee's not Ken Burns. She's an assistant manager at Food for Less. Her heart is made of stone.
I love a good high-low, like highbrow Ken Burns and low, whatever, Penny Mart.
Food for Less. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was hilarious. Howard is just going to like kind of say, all right, Molly, now you're on your own. This is an every man for himself type situation. I cannot be drugged down here. But Molly is not giving up. Mm-hmm. Back at the office, we have Arthur and Nicholas, who are still glued to the Sophia show. She's so compelling, especially when she's mad. I would watch a whole limited series about her.
Who among us would not? Yeah. Do you think, I mean, especially if you keep them 25 minutes like these.
Oh, I love it. I don't even have to 8x that if it's 25
minutes. No, I would. If anything, I would like 0.9, 0.8x that.
Oh, wow. Do you think, Ariel, that this is Apple putting out a test balloon for this the Sophia Salinas limited series?
Stop. Don't tease. Like, they're like, and that's what it would be called. It would be called Sophia Salinas. Like, there's a lot of good alliteration there. Mm-hmm.
Could be. She's very compelling.
But it's about her dating life.
about, we could have Tony, we could have Jalen, we could have all the different characters. We could find out about this friend group that Sophia allegedly has. Nicholas is going to have an epiphany here. He tells Arthur that he learned how to read lips when he was younger so he could see if his parents were talking about him being gay or not.
which I love that, like, right before he says the last part, I just thought he was going to stop what he said. If they were talking about me, which is like the most egotistical thing you can do, like, especially as a kid, but it totally makes sense. But then there's like this sweet, like, side of it, just like Nicholas, where it's like, it's very egotistical. It's very about him. But it's sweet and relatable that he would worry about that. That he'd be like, oh God, are they talking about that specific fact? I love it.
So he's going to deploy this secret talent of his to read Sophia's lips and figure out her phone conversation. And he says she's either saying relationship or ranch dip. And Arthur's going to suggest that if we use the context clues, it's probably relationship. And Nicholas just snaps like, okay, could you just support me right now? I'm doing something magical.
It's very funny. And here it was at that point that I was like, where I was like fully in on like them as a pair. And especially because Howard is like indisposed and they're also in like their, you know, ice age, Howard and Nicholas.
It's
funny to have Nicholas here with Arthur, and, you know, is it as funny as Nicholas and Howard? Perhaps not, but I think it's no less sweet and silly.
Yeah. I mean, like, all of these pairings are sort of odd couple pairings. Like, they are like, you know, definitely, like, we had, like, with Howard and Nicholas, like, there was, you know, like, they kind of have very different personality styles and flavors and contexts and language. And then Arthur is like, you know, this is Arthur Nicholas pairing is the same thing. So I think that this is very fun too. I could watch another episode that puts these two together, you know, in a heartbeat. I thought that this was really fun. There's some lines I'll like underline, which I think kind of highlight their contrast in a fun way. But you know, she's going to hang up the phone, and then it's like, you know, Arthur's like, well, I guess the show's over now. He's like, I should go pick up my daughter who's been at a friend's house for 5 hours now.
This is probably my favorite detail of what happens within the office, where then he calls her and he's just like, you're going to have to spend the night by. Like, he's like, I'm never coming
home. I'm never picking you up. So just when they think the show's over, a man is going to walk into the office looking for Sophia. And they're like, oh, this must be Jalen. And then Sophia lets him into the office and says, Tony, what are you doing here? And Nicholas and Arthur just gasp.
Nicholas's face, especially when he's like, she's in there. Like, he's like pleading, like he wants it so badly. Like, please go in there. It's so good.
You know, so over at Spades night at Renee's house, we're going to see that, you know, Renee has this one card table that's unsteady, and she props it up with a shoe under its leg. And that detail is going to come into play later. Molly is still trying to win Renee over. So she puts on the Boys to Men jam, Motown Philly, and comes in and like she's dancing, and she wants Renee to like do the dance that they came up with together. She says, you know, remember that summer we listened to this over and over again and made everybody watch us do this dance, which is like so, like, I definitely remember having like friends or cousins or my sister, like we would like choreograph something really stupid and just like make everybody in the whole world watch us do a dance.
I know. Meanwhile, now the idea of anybody gathering to watch me do anything is like frightening to no end.
My kids do this. They'll make up something, or they'll really want to show something off, and it's so sweet. I'm like, the fact that you like think that like people are gonna care about this thing you did is so like, because I feel like that gets crushed in us. Like, we have this inherent value absolutely. Of like, it's like, I drew this, and like, I want to show everybody, and like, it's just. And at some point, we're like, I drew this. I'm so ashamed of myself.
I'm
like,
ashamed of this and myself, and I'm going to burn it.
Say the people who are like submitting, publishing a couple hours of their audio recordings every day.
Mm-hmm. It's different. You don't have to look at me.
It's like, please love us. Please love us.
Five stars. Five stars, please, for binge show recaps.
Renee is going to look, just looking annoyed. She's like not feeling it. But then Molly kind of goads her and she says like, well, if you, I guess maybe you forgot how to do it. And that's going to be enough to for Renee to get up and join
push
in.
Push that button.
Yeah. And then they're going to like do their little dancey dance and it's cute. And everybody's like getting into it and laughing and clapping. And it's fun. It fixes everything.
It was complicated. I was trying to like imagine myself doing it. I'm like, okay, then you go left and you're right in the clap. It's like, oh no, that's too many steps. Like it's pretty complicated as far as like little kid dances go. And maybe perhaps this is why she was so good at the dance last episode.
Oh yeah.
This is her first time dancing in front of people.
She was a natural. Yeah.
Yeah. She's doing a version of this. So really, you know,
her whole life was building to this point.
Yes, and Renee should be honored basically was on the news doing their dance.
There you go. Back at the office, Nicholas is starting to struggle with the lip reading, and he says, you know, it's all gibberish. Dawn, day, velvet, Volvo. And that's enough for Arthur to realize that they're speaking Spanish. And Nicholas is like, Oh, drats. I don't speak Spanish, but Arthur has 30,000 XP on his Duolingo app.
I only have 8.
I don't do Duolingo. What does this translate to?
It's a lot.
Translate.
So like for one lesson, mm-hmm. you get 10 XP. And okay. you can redo lessons, but not on the same day. So the only way to get more points is to move on or move back. Like the what I do like about it is like when you go backwards to like practice stuff, you're still getting points for that. Again, only one set of points per lesson per day. So you can't just like keep doing the same lesson over and over again.
Got it.
30K is a lot. Like it's a lot. I'm at lifetime right now, like 8K over like 2 or 3 years.
Okay. I'm not surprised that Arthur is an overachiever in this domain.
Not at all. Yeah. He's mucho estudiante. No, that doesn't make sense. I actually do speak Spanish. I was just trying to say it like him. Yeah, he's a very good student.
So Arthur's going to propose that Nicholas reads the lips and Arthur's going to translate. So this is like, and then this is really, really fun. So Nicholas is lip reading and he comes up with Ron's peas stay coral zone.
And then I knew immediately. I was like,
you did?
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
So now, Ariel, I need to learn to lip read so that we can be a dynamic duo here.
We'll be unstoppable. And eventually I'll be able to do the French version too.
Oh. ooh la la. Like what French?
You have like 5 XP for Duolingo for French. It's great. You're trying really hard. I love it.
I took French in junior. Oh, I took French in high school. I did. Mm-hmm. I took French in high school. You'd never know it. You'd never. Mm-hmm. Je m'appelle Dr. Amanda. So yeah. So Arthur's gonna get. He's gonna have his eureka moment, and he's gonna say, "Can you say it? You say it, Ariel."
Rompiste, José, me rompiste el corazón. Yeah, you broke my heart.
You broke my heart.
Mm-hmm. And they rejoice.
They're so happy. They're so excited about it. And then Arthur's like, well, it's kind of sad, but it's also amazing what we did. And Nicholas is like, yeah, it's very compelling.
It's very compelling. They're so stupid. I hate them. I love them.
This is really cute together, the two of them.
Yeah. Nicholas just makes everyone more interesting and better, really.
He is such like I know that we've like already like heaped so much praise on Joel Kim Booster and like the character of Nicholas. But I mean, this is the revelation to me, like from this show, is him as an actor in this character. It's just been like so much fun. I feel like he's hilarious. It's like it's fresh. Like it's been really great.
He's the key to unlocking like the more interesting parts of everybody's personality.
True. I think I think Molly is funniest in scenes with Nicholas. I think Howard has been funniest in scenes with Nicholas. This is like some of like, you know, this is some of the funnier Arthur stuff that we've seen. So it's really great. Over at Renee's, everybody's having fun now. They're playing spades. They're reminiscing about old times. This scene, Ariel, this didn't entirely work for me. And I don't feel like they resolved it. But Howard's going to show up again. He went out to get ice and sort of avoid the fray when Renee was really mad. He comes back and he sees that everybody is getting along. And he's like, oh, this is great. You're not mad anymore. And like Renee says, the only thing I'm mad about is how long it took you to get that ice. And then Molly is just going to like pile on and make Howard the butt of the jokes. Mm-hmm. Like she says, like, isn't that just like Howard, one step behind? And Howard says like that it's a little bit hurtful when everyone laughs at him. And Molly is just like, I don't know why, you should be used to it by now. So I feel like this was really like Molly. I know that Howard sort of abandoned Molly and said that he didn't like, you know anything about that picture. But this feels meaner to me, like the way that Molly like targets Howard as the butt of the joke to sort of bring her together with Renee. And I feel like she never apologizes for this. Like this didn't resolve for me in a way that was satisfying.
Right. Cause I think what is realistic about it to me, as far as like the family dynamics, is like clearly Molly is trying here and she's not getting anywhere. And Renee is, you know, kind of like not letting up. And it makes sense to me that Molly would revert back to when like Renee and her were children. And she's kind of like, it's very easy for her to go into the mode of making fun of Howard. I imagine that making fun of Howard is like a thing that the family just does that maybe they do less of now, hopefully, because like you said, it is mean. But it was kind of like, oh no, she turned into like the mean girl that perhaps her and Renee used to be, in the hopes of like getting Renee back. And like, it seems like Howard, it doesn't go far. I was wondering where it was going in the moment. I think a little bit to your point, because it feels a little bit out of character for Molly. Like even if we had, you know, an earlier scene of them even just like a mention of them teasing him, I think would have helped this feel a little more like realistic or realistic to their relationship. So I think all in all, just in general, anything that was going to happen in the family was going to be, they were going to get a lot of leeway for it, because there's so much history and there's so much stuff that they're drawing on that we don't know about as viewers. And you kind of have to, you don't have to, but ideally they make it easy for you to like give them that benefit of the doubt of like, oh, we're not going to get this because we've never seen, we've never seen this before. So I guess ultimately to your question, do we need the resolution? I guess the good news is no, because Howard doesn't seem to be all that affected by it. So maybe that's some progress on his end.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree that I think that this is like a believable family dynamic, that like people become like, you know, that like in families, people take different roles, and some people have the function of sort of being the butt of the joke, or even if they're not the butt of the joke, it's like they're, you know, they're not like they're not taken seriously in a certain way, like just because that's the way the family sees him. And like, what was he like, Lil Wee Wee? Like, we got that detail.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm sure he got teased for that.
So like, I think that it makes a lot of sense that there would be that history there, but like in the Molly Halley and the Howard Molly relationship that we've been seeing to this point, and like the whole thing that gets her at this party is like his support in her and his belief in her, and like he wants her to be part of the family. So like, if that's a familiar pattern to get pulled into, and if that's serves the function of bonding her closer to Renee, like that makes sense to me. But I do feel like, in the service of Molly having the growth narrative that we believe that she's having, and in the service of like Howard being somebody who has believed in her and encouraged her, like I would like to see that be acknowledged, that like, yes, you were little wee wee, but now you actually like helped me have the confidence to come back into the family and repair those relationships. And like, you're better than that. And I'm not going to treat you the way I did when we were kids.
Yeah, it is a little easy. It is a little like overly clean that that the way everything resolves by the end of the episode is, you know, it's an episode. So they want to, for the most part, like, right, close the loop on the majority of things that they have introduced here. So I think, you know, on some of it probably is unfortunately just down to the amount of time that they can devote to certain things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's just the reality of the shorter episodes, which,
yeah,
I'm always a fan of, but sometimes you have to, like, you know, cut some corners for characters to get to a certain place.
Yeah. I feel that. I mean, I think that it's important enough to me, like, in terms of, like, who Molly is as a person and, like, honoring, mm-hmm, her relationship with Howard, that, like, I would love to see it come up again. Like, yeah, even if they didn't, yeah, fit it in the episode, like, I would just love, mm-hmm, for it to get acknowledged, and it doesn't have to, like, be belabored or have a lot of time. Right. I would have liked it in this episode, but I will forgive them if it comes up again. So I'm just watching for that, because I feel like Molly really does get, like, Molly is, you know, her life is too frictionless still for, mm-hmm, me. Like, and I would like to see her, like, actually face consequences a little bit more than she has. And this could be an interesting way to do that.
Yeah. Especially because, to your point, it is pretty out of character for her.
Mm-hmm. Back at the office, we're back at the Sophia show.
Who knows what time it is at this point? It's so, yeah, good.
Oh, yeah. Sophia's going to show Tony the door, and he leaves looking upset. And now Sophia's ready to leave and say goodnight to Arthur and Nicholas. And they're like, oh, no, you're not getting out of here that easily. They demand for her to tell them what's going on. And she's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make a scene. And Nicholas says, you're sorry? This is the most interesting thing to ever happen in this office.
To which Sophia, I'm sure, in her head was like, you little ish. But yes, fine.
And this is when Sophia comes back with, what? Greta Thunberg was here last week. And Nicholas is like, that creepy Dutch girl? I don't give a shit about her. I give a shit about you.
I died. If I had something in my mouth, I would have spit it out.
Do you think that Taylor Swift wrote that line? Just kidding.
Wow, I know. When they did that line, I was like, this was clearly edited in the future. Like,
put it in post. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, like, I would like, I mean, this is very funny, but I would like the show to be, like, a little bit more self-conscious about, like, how this is not entirely a joke, that, like, you know, people, that on some level, this is, there's less sincerity in actually caring about the environment and more sincerity in, like, the frivolous things that are around celebrity image and all of that.
Yeah, no, I think I agree, because Nicholas is kind of vocalizing, like, unfortunately how a lot of people feel, mm-hmm, and that doesn't mean, even though we laugh, it doesn't mean it's okay or even helpful. So I think you're right that there is more, there's a little more room for the show to kind of point to that in, mm-hmm, a more intentional way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's really well said. And Nicholas is gonna add that he stands Sophia so hard right now.
Which is so sweet.
It's really cute. To which Arthur adds, if standing is a good thing, then I totally agree.
Right. Which, like, very, like, perhaps not so subtle nod to, like, toxic fandom and standing. Mm-hmm. Or just, like, when standing
is a good thing.
It's like, assuming it's a good thing, I am that. It's very funny.
And, you know, Arthur adds, like, you don't have to tell us every detail, but we just want to make sure you're okay. And Nicholas says, yeah. Are you safe? Whatever. But just talk to
yes, Nicholas, get to the goods.
Renee's for Spades night, she's gonna come back in from the kitchen with some dip, and Molly is greeting her with this brand new oak card table that has real leather and looks like very expensive. No. And nice. And she's gonna say, you don't need to put a shoe under it to keep it steady.
I'm already upset when I was watching this. I'm like, no, Molly.
You don't get it, Molly. You don't get it. But yeah, Renee is, like, not having it. She's mad. She doesn't want the table. And she accuses Molly of throwing money around to buy off the family because she knows she hasn't been around, which is not wrong.
It absolutely is not wrong. And we know that she didn't go to the wedding. And here we find out that she tried to make up for it by giving her, as I think, as Renee puts it, some like weird colored lamp.
A fancy ass lamp. Yeah.
And it turns out that it was a whole ass art installation, like light installation.
Yeah. I'm looking up James Terrell. So she says it's the James Terrell
light installation. Yeah. I assume that he's probably a real person because there's so many mentions of real people in this.
Yeah. He says he's an American artist known for his work within the light and space. Space movement?
Space. I don't know, no, not space.
I would throw Renee, I would have thrown that out in the backyard too. Much of his career has been devoted to a still unfinished work called Roden Crater, a natural cinder stone crater located outside Flagstaff, Arizona, that he is turning into a massive naked eye observatory, and for his series of sky spaces, enclosed spaces that frame the sky. Okay, so this sounds like a very legit big deal.
We're gonna have to try to get in to record the finale podcast at the at that installation, at that crater.
Yes. Oh, that's where we'll do the finale at the in Flagstaff.
We're gonna try.
Well, that's what we're gonna do, folks. You'll have no way of knowing where we are when we record it. Coming
it
to you
us.
Live from the James Terrell Art Installation in Flagstaff, Arizona. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the future. This is your patron dollars hard at work.
Mm-hmm. That's what you pay the big bucks for. So yeah, I mean, Renee is going to tell Molly money can't buy everything. She's upset. She says like Spades Night is canceled. And she storms off into the kitchen. And like, I think we all can understand where Renee is coming from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I like about the episode is like we're seeing this dynamic. It's very realistic. It's very fascinating to like fill out Molly's history, Molly's world a little bit with the family. Clearly it was like intended all along because, you know, Howard is her cousin. So there was always the door there open for that. It's not like it feels out of nowhere. And Renee here is just like, it's of course she'd be resentful, not of Molly's money per se, but just of the fact that Molly seemingly cut them out. And like, how is she supposed to feel? You know, how is she can only interpret it a couple of ways of like why that would have happened, why she didn't go to the wedding, why she, you know, lost touch with them. It's just, again, that's what happens in families.
Right. Right. I mean, it's an interesting family dynamic to go back to because we knew from the beginning that Molly didn't come from money, right? Like, and John didn't even come from money. He's a quote unquote self-made man who like built his like tech empire. So, you know, what happens in a family, and you know, like I don't have like firsthand experience with somebody becoming, you know, one of the wealthiest people in the world, but like I mean it's understandable that when one person in a family kind of moves into a different social station, has a different lifestyle, has a different social circle, like it can cause a lot of friction and a lot of tension because like Molly's sphere of her life has been something that like the people that she grew up with that like knew her as a child, it's like all of a sudden it's something that they can't relate to. It's not their world. And, you know, that makes it awkward, I think, on both sides, right? It's awkward for Molly to go back and kind of confront, you know, who she was and how she's changed. And it probably makes them feel awkward too. So I think it's nice that the show decided to explore that aspect of, you know, the kind of mega rich lifestyle, you know, and how that can affect a family dynamic. And like the kind of the character of Renee is like the primary mechanism that they're choosing to do that with.
Right.
As Renee storms off, Howard is going to offer to go back into the kitchen to give her a piece of his mind because he thinks that, you know, the things that she said about Molly weren't fair. And he says, "This is for you, Baby Yoda." And then he adds, "If I don't come back, I have written a comic book. It is called Ninja College. It is the worst thing I have ever read. Please delete it."
Delete it again. Not please get it published. Please delete it. Incredible zag from him.
Really, really funny. And like, you know, here it is again, like Howard coming to Molly's rescue. So it's like he's just been so kind and generous with her. Like, I just want her to like you know, like she owes him. Like she owes him to treat him better, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%.
Back in the conference room, Nicholas is pouring the three of them an 18-year-old Añejo tequila. And, you know, Sophia's going to take a drink and kind of let it all out. She says, you know, okay, there are two men in my life. And Nicholas is like, yes, okay, keep going.
Love triangle. Got it.
We learn about Tony, who's a lawyer. He's thoughtful, reliable, steady. And also he organized her kitchen pantry once. And Arthur's like, ooh, interesting, by function or color?
Oh God, only he would ask. Turns out it was alphabetical, which that's probably confusing.
Yeah, I feel like that's the least helpful way to organize your kitchen pantry.
You have to like really know what everything is. Like I can't tell if that's coriander or something else that looks like coriander.
Yeah. Maybe Arthur and Tony should get together. I feel like those two have a lot in common. Mm-hmm. And then we hear about Jalen, who's the other man. He's an artist and he keeps her on her toes. And Nicholas is like, we get it. He's good at sex. Continue.
Yeah. It's like, no, but really, like, please don't. Please do continue about that same thing. Please stay on this topic.
So Sophia doesn't know which one is right for her. And Arthur's going to say, well, obviously you're going to pick the artist because he's more interesting. Every day will be an adventure. Those guys always win. People like choosing the sexy rebel John Bon Jovi type, which I guess John Bon Jovi is still the touchstone, the cultural touchstone for sexy rebel.
I love that for him, especially. Yes, like you just said, it's like that's who the coolest person always was. This was heartbreaking. Like all of a sudden, that moment that was like really funny, there was just like this moment where I never. It was another like again surprising moment, especially from Arthur, of just him explaining his worldview, explaining like why he acted a certain way with Molly, perhaps why it was easy for him to like back away from her. It was really sad to hear him like have that view of himself and of the world, of like basically saying nice guys finish last.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of like pathos in this scene from Arthur. Like, I think that what we hear him say is this like very self-deprecating, like sort of showing that he doesn't have a lot of faith in himself and doesn't really believe that he could have any appeal to somebody. And it's this sort of defeatist attitude. But then, you know, Nicholas is going to disagree and he says, I've dated a lot of Jalen's in my time and it's all fun and games until one of them robs you and pawns your watch for a bunch of ketamine.
Oh my God. That's not love. I will just say that.
No, that's not love. That's not love. Sophia says, well, you know, to be fair, Jalen wouldn't do that. Nicholas says, you never think they will, but they always do.
Again, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah. And Sophia like appreciates this advice. She says they both have good points and she's glad they talked. And Nicholas says, so which one are you going to choose? And Sophia's like, you think I'm going to go based on my decision based on what you two told me? No, I'm going to go talk to my real friends about this. And Nicholas is like, who are they? We want to know about your life.
This is hysterical. Again, the Nicholas pleading face of just like him, like, please, this is all I have. This is the most interesting thing that happens to me. My life is so boring. He just like thrives in other people's like messy nonsense. And again, it's just really funny that Sophia's like, you know, like you think any other show, it's like, wow, you guys gave me the best advice. Thank you so much. She's like, no, this was great to drink, but y'all are trash. I have to go like talk to my real friends that actually know me.
Yeah. She's like, the tequila was good, but you guys don't know anything.
She's no dummy.
In Renee's kitchen, we're going to go to see Howard defending Molly. And, you know, she's not perfect, but she's trying hard. She's helping people. She's a good person. And Renee's like, well, you know, if she's such a good person, why'd she miss my wedding without even telling me? I know a private room at the Olive Garden is in Majorca, but that was the most important day of my life. And Howard's like, but you got divorced 3 days later.
She's like, shh, be quiet. That doesn't make a difference. It's sweet, but like it is sweet to see her. And it's I forgot to highlight, it's a Kim Whitley, I believe, is the actress who plays Renee, somebody that I love. She's been on random things that I've seen. That's So Raven, other random movies. And she's a really good comedic actress. So I was like really happy to see her here. Oh, that's right. She was in Master of None playing relative. She's really great. She brings emotion and comedy to things, as many actors on this show do. So she's a very welcome addition. And to hear her, even with like the Olive Garden comment and the Only 3 Days Later, like the genuine, honest reason of why she's hurt is like really effective here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And Molly is going to come in and she says, you know, it's okay. Renee's right. And, you know, Molly admits that she was trying to buy her off. And, you know, she goes on to sort of explain that, you know, she didn't actually miss Renee's wedding to go to Mallorca for vacation, but it was really the right before Renee's wedding. Molly found texts on John's iPad from another woman, and he talked her into going away to Mallorca, like as an opportunity for them to fix things. And, you know, she didn't want to go at first, but he always has a way of getting what he wants. And then, you know, he denied everything and she believed him. And that was a huge mistake because, you know, we all know what happened later. And, you know, Renee's just going to like receive that and say, I wish you just could have told me. And Molly admits that she was just embarrassed, because everyone thought she had this perfect life. And Renee comes in with like, really, honestly, like this just spitting cold, hard facts. Like, I knew that guy was bad news. Never give a man too much money, especially a nerd.
Especially a nerd, which is hilarious. I've never heard that before. Makes a lot of sense. and it's really interesting that, right, I think this is the first that we've heard of previous entanglements that John had, because clearly by the end of the first episode, Molly's like, enough of this. I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. Like, you know, you're sleeping with your assistant, Haley, whatever. But now we know, or we have a more specific example of this had happened before and she took him back. She must have felt like the biggest idiot in that moment when it happened again. And also, I think it's interesting, again, to draw a parallel to Howie's relationship, where he's just willing to believe that his girlfriend is lying to him. We know, Nicholas knows, but he's just blindly believing her. And he's overhearing this story that Molly's telling of Molly, like blindly believing John. So I think that might come into his brain later on in the season.
That's a really good point that Howard's here and listening to all of this. I think that there's a really interesting parallel between this A plot and the B plot, whereas like, you know, I think that as like successful people tend to think that like the things that people like about them have to do with their success and the ways that they're perfect. And they're like afraid to share those vulnerabilities. But like in reality, the thing that bonds you to other people is actually showing those vulnerabilities. So like, I mean, it's like a little bit, you know, this is different because Molly is admitting that, you know, she was in this relationship and it wasn't perfect and she might have been naive and taking John back. But like Renee can understand that. Like, it's like that's relatable and she can empathize with that. Like, what's harder to empathize with is like my rich cousin has this perfect life and can fly off to exotic places whenever she wants. It's like that doesn't, that's not like what bonds them together. It's actually sharing this vulnerability. And, you know, it's a little different that it's not like Arthur and Nicholas are like, oh my gosh, like Sophia is so, but it's like Sophia was so untouchable and inaccessible and private that they just like crave knowing anything about her. And like learning that she has this messy love life is actually like just so fascinating to them and they want to know more. So I think it like shows that like both of these women might have been kind of closed off and really managing their presentation in a certain way. But like in all of that management, they're actually putting up walls that are keeping them from other people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's really smart to point that out. And like those parallels are there. And like, even though it's rooted in comedy, it's like no less effective. And it's just really smart. And the show is like, you know, flexing a little here in a way that they have totally earned.
I agree. On the drive home, Molly's going to thank Howard for bringing her and for like, you know, defending her to Renee. And Howard says, I meant it. You're working hard to make changes, and I know it's not easy. It's nice to see you getting back in touch with your roots. So this is nice. This is more Molly and Howard bonding. And, you know, she said, he tells her that she's climbing up the ranks and she's now his second favorite cousin behind Keith, who does a hilarious impression of the sloth from Zootopia.
It's like so specific. It's such a freaking specific reference. It's so dumb.
It's really dumb.
Is that even funny? It's just like the fact that it, like, the reference is so long and wordy and like winding. That's what makes it funny.
Yeah. And of course, like, Howard's gonna go and try to do the sloth impression, and Molly's like, no, not while you're driving.
Not doing that. She doesn't trust him to do both, and I agree with her for not trusting him.
Back at the office kitchen, like, Arthur is like cleaning up his like adorable little lunch containers that he brings to work every day. And Sophia is going to come in and thank him for his advice. And she's going to add, you know, but, you know, for what it's worth, I think you're wrong. I think sometimes the dependable guy does get the girl. And between you and me, I think you have more of a chance with her than you think.
I loved this. I immediately, like, I'm trying to remember if this was the part. I definitely teared up when Molly was like talking about John and she's confessing, and amazing work by Maya Rudolph there to have just like a very organic and effective emotional moment. And here it's like a carryover of that a little bit, of just like this genuine kindness from Sophia, who, as we already said, is like super private normally and kind of doesn't get unless invited to. She doesn't like to get involved in other people's things, certainly not personal lives. And this, to me, I'm just going to say it, this felt so much like a really, really well done, like, Grey's Anatomy plot, in that, like, at the end of the episode, like, I can hear the snow patrol.
That's your comfort show.
That's my comfort show. That's my cultural touch point. That's what I thought you were going to say, which is not quite true. But my point is, like, I can hear, like, the snow patrol blaring, and it's just like, you know, you're wrong. Like, this worldview that you have, you need to hear from me, a person that you didn't expect to hear it from, who you have spent time with, and now I see you in a different way. I want to let you know that here's how I see it. And for whatever it's worth to you, I want you to know that you're more valuable, or bring more, or, you know, or a better, you are more than you think you are. And I think it's, as corny as it is, it's so genuinely beautiful. And, like, I loved it. And I think I teared up in that moment as well. It was awesome.
No, this is really sweet. And clearly, like, Arthur needs to hear this message. Caveat, though, this is me going to be putting on my cynic's hat here. Arthur and Molly, it's not that they didn't work out because Molly chose, like, the sexier Jon Bon Jovi guy over Arthur. Like, it's because they work together, and it's like not like it's like that. This isn't the issue. And also, like, Arthur is like dating somebody else. Like, what's wrong with Chelsea? Like Chelsea chose him. Like, why isn't Chelsea's love good enough? This is like very much like the nice guy is entitled to get, like, the cheerleader plot,
whatever he wants. Yes, right. He has earned whatever he wants, whatever that looks like whether it's the cool girl or the nerd or
right,
whatever.
Like, and like Arthur has somebody. Like, what's wrong with her? And why isn't, like, her choosing of him, like, validation enough that he is worthy? Like, why does he need, like, his multi-billionaire? But, like, I get that he and Molly had a connection, but the reason that the connection didn't work, like, the reason that Molly, like, kind of rebuffed it and created distance, and she didn't even rebuff it, it was like all kind of subtext, but, like, the reason she created distance was, like, for a very appropriate reason, and, like, not because she was sort of, like, drawn to a Jalen type. So, like, I feel like the premise of this is, like, yes, for whatever reason, like, Arthur has this low self-esteem and, like, believes that he is, like, not worthy of love and that women don't pick him. But a woman picked him, like, just a couple episodes ago, and they're going to Temecula this weekend. So it's like, I'm a little bit annoyed, like, by this reframing of, like, what is going on with Arthur's romantic life. And it kind of gives me the, like, entitled kind of nice guy, like, because I'm a nice guy, I should get to pick whatever trophy woman from the world I want.
I think that is completely valid, and obviously it's, like, rooted in, like, years of this existing and, like, culture, and we're referencing all these movies and tropes, and I think That is, there's something to that. And it would be hard to like argue around this like inherent trope. I almost said bias, but it's like, it's almost like a trope, right? That they're leaning on. But I will say the thing that I like about it specifically is that he did, I don't love that like they both kind of chose in their own way to like disengage, right? But like what Sophia sees from her perspective is he is trying to get over Molly. And he's pursuing this, like she sees the way that he looks at Molly, and she sees the way that like he is basically pining over her in the office in a very sweet, appropriate way, right? It's not like pushing the issue. So I do like that, but we can't get away from, so like in that sense, it's like you need to give, so what she's really saying is like, you need to give yourself a chance. If you're not going to get over her, then you need to put yourself in this best position to like try to actually earn her, because perhaps you haven't done that yet, right? Because Molly is a full adult and she gets to decide for herself. But having said all that, there is still the boss employee dynamic that makes it messy beyond even the trope thing, which I think is also very valid, as I said. Of just like, okay, let's say all that is good and well, and they both choose each other, and you know, we're both adults and we want to be together more than these other people that we are now involved with. But now what do we do? Because you're kind of my boss still, and like
right. It's still a complicated, tricky thing. I mean, I think you made a really good point, Ariel. And I think that you're right to point out that like in the show, I think we're meant to see that like that Molly and Arthur kind of are right for each other, and like their connection is more real than these other, like I think we're supposed to believe that they're kind of like the meant to be couple. And like part of the reason that he's giving up is because he doesn't think he's worthy of her. Right. But then like we said, the other reason he's giving up is because it's like kind of not okay. So I mean, like so I think that that's both sides. And then for like Sophia, who's Arthur's boss, to be like, go get her. Like, I'm just like, this is weird. This is not.
Yeah, it's, I love it. And I'm hearing it and I'm feeling the Grey's Anatomy, but like, where does it end? And
aren't they all screwing each other in Grey's Anatomy?
Yes, they are. So that's not like the healthiest like example to follow. But I think it'll be interesting if the show can find because clearly, as we've said before, and we were teasing, like, is this where the show is going? It seems like at least for the immediate future, as we go into these last two episodes, the future is Molly will be pursued by Arthur in a more full way than previously, right? So if the show can find a nuanced, intelligent, honest way to deal with the employee-employer effect specifically, I think we'll make a big difference on how we feel about it going forward.
Yeah. I mean, like if he leaves and like goes and works somewhere else, or like if like something changes, like I think that I would be way more on board with it. So anyway, we're going to like have our final scene in Howard's car, where Molly's getting a text from Jean-Pierre, and he got her another gift in addition to the strawberry Kit Kat and their jewels that belong to Marie Antoinette. And I have to say, like, I'm already bored with Jean-Pierre. I'm like done with him.
You can't. Yeah. I mean, no offense to Olivia Martinez, who had his heyday. Mm-hmm. Please go out and see, Unfaithful. It's a crazy movie. I agree. Like, you gave her the Kit Kat. The Kit Kat was the cool thing. Now you're giving her jewels. Like, that's just dumb. Like, that's like that. This is like the equivalent. Actually, maybe that's what it is, right? This is the equivalent of Molly getting them like a table. It's not something she asked for. The Kit Kat was the cool thing that she would have never gotten for herself. The jewels are something that she could get for herself. So it's just like, what are we doing?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just like, you're fabulously wealthy. You can just like buy anything in the world. And it's like, that's what John did. Like, that's what John did for her. Like, here's a yacht. Here's a this. And like, and then I'm not saying Jean-Pierre is going to cheat on her. We don't know that. But it's just like, I don't know. I'm bored with it. But Molly's not. She's delighted. Like, she lights up like a Christmas tree when she sees that she got these fancy jewels.
Yeah, and to the like soap opera-ish quality again of their thing, I do like the endings of the episode where like she's feeling good about her relationship with Jean-Pierre, whether she's questioning whether it's right or not. That could be true also. But she's for the most part feeling good about it. And then now you have Arthur feeling more confident and more right, in quotes, about him pursuing Molly. So mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, narratively, it's an interesting place to leave off.
Yes, I agree. So we still have this like loose end of like the Nicholas and Howard friendship. We kind of tabled that for a week. So like, I think we'll probably get back to that in the last, in the penultimate and the ultimate episodes of the season. We have all the love triangle stuff. So I think there's a lot of interesting things that we're still yet to explore as Lute goes into its final two episodes of the season. And I'm excited to talk about it with you, Ariel, and discover like what other food and drink preferences you have along the way.
As I air all my like horrible dirty laundry of the things that, of the terrible things that I eat and consume. Yes, it's my pleasure. It's fun to be honest with Dr. Amanda always. Yeah,
it's those vulnerabilities that make us feel closer.
Yes,
Ariel.
These are the real moments that we will always remember in our podcasting relationship.
I think I'm going to say tentatively that for the next 2 weeks, like we're going to be back on a slightly more normal schedule in terms of release, possibly, of the podcast.
Yes, I think that is fair to say.
Don't hold us back
because, you know, somebody might be having us watch a lizard over the weekend, and you might have to
hop a private jet to Mallorca on the drop of a hat. So we never know.
It's a whole thing, but thank you all for caring. If you do enjoy the podcast, we invite you to subscribe to Binge Show Recaps and the main feed Post Show Recaps, wherever you get your podcast, rate and review. It's the beginning of the month, so it's a wonderful time to become a patron of Post Show Recaps. A lot of show coverage.
Some would say it's the best time to become a patron of Post Show Recaps.
You know, it's the only time, really, as far as I'm concerned. I shouldn't say that, but like, they charge you for the whole month.
There's no bad time, but there is kind of like
there's the best time. And this is the bestest time to join because you pay for the whole month regardless.
And if you want to hear, you know, if you want to join us in the Discord talking about the last couple seasons of Lute, like the last couple episodes of Lute, it's great to do that. Also coming up, I know that there's, you know, there's a whole Game of Thrones thing happening again this month.
there's something Game of Thrones related that may or may not be happening in pop culture. Yes, there's a lot of coverage for House of the Dragon coming up. Mm-hmm. There'll be like multi shows. There'll be feedback shows. There'll be a lot of stuff, I'm sure. So I'm very excited to get into that, listening to all that stuff. We have a merch store now and if you're a patron at a certain level, you can get a discount on that. If you've ever wanted a Wiggler's Wombat hat or some cool mugs to drink things that you feel shame about because they're way too sweet, you can absolutely...
Just melt your ice cream, and people think you're drinking coffee, but you're just drinking.
But really, it's just melty ice cream, and like it's 7 a.m. But whatever, that's none of their business. You have your mug, and it's not transparent, and that's all that counts. We need David Chang to get here and make us fresh ice cream. Okay?
Where can the people find you though, Ariel? In the meantime,
they can find me eating my shame on Twitter at that other Ariel. And I'm also on the Discord. It's a lovely place that you get access to if you're a patron, talking a lot of smack about, and when I say smack, I mean good things and bad things, about all things TV and movies. Speaking of movies, I cover Movies with Grace every week. And that's exciting. I'm also covering, also with Grace, a different Apple TV Plus show, Blackbird, which is also in its final episodes. Actually, I believe next week is the finale already. So that's a thing. Yeah, look for us. We're around. Where are you?
Well, you can also find me on the Discord if you're a PSR patron, which we've already agreed, everybody, that you're going to be if you're not already. And mm-hmm. Or you can find me on Twitter where I'm at Dr. Amanda R. That's Dr. Amanda R. And I will tweet about everything that I'm doing. So that's the best place to keep up with me.
Yeah, sometimes I'll just retweet what she tweets because that way I'm just amplifying her voice because I'm such a good ally.
That's wonderful.
Good ally.
Well, I think that with all of that, I think we've said everything that there is to say, except for thanking the person that makes all of this possible.
David Chang.
Thank you, David Chang.
Thank you, thank you. We'll see you next week. Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.